Okay. Perek Yud Tes, Parshas Kedoshim, Pasuk Yud Dalet. Loi sekal al cheresh, v'lifnei iver, loi sitein michshel. For a blind person, one shouldn't put a stumbling block. Rashi says over here that what does it mean, l'fnei iver lo yisit mechshol? It means also one shouldn't give bad advice to somebody. When you give advice to somebody, you have to give advice, eitzeh hoygenes loy, advice that's good for him. Rashi is adding a superfluous word. There's an extra word over here. Eitzeh hoygenes, it could have said. Good advice. It says, eitzeh hoygenes loy. Good advice for him personally. In other words, sometimes, when you look at the overall picture in the world, you don't want to give him that advice. But him personally, that's the best thing for him. And I'll explain to you exactly what I mean with two stories. One, they're very similar stories, but I'll mention both of them. One is, there was a yeshiva that came to the Briskerov, and they wanted a manal for the yeshiva. They needed a new principal. And the people from the board, they came into the Briskerov, and they asked him about a certain person. Do you think he would be a good manal for yeshiva? Briskerov told them, yes, he would make a perfect principal for you. You should definitely hire him. Later on, that person came into the Briskerov, and he asked the Briskerov a shaila. He asked him, they offered me this job as a principal. Do you think I should take the job? So Briskerov said, no, I don't think you should. I think you could get a better job than that. There's other jobs out there. You shouldn't take it. So what's the pshat? Tastira. The school didn't understand it. They came to the Briskerov with tightness. I don't understand it. You told us we should hire him, then you tell him not to take the job. Briskerov explained, as Mekayim, what Chazal said, you've got to give people Eitzah Hoygenes Loy. What's good for him? For you, the advice was, you can get a principal like that. It's great for you. Try and get him if you can. So you asked me, I told you try and get him. If he comes to me, I'm going to look from his point of view. From his point of view, it's not the best thing. He could get a better job. I couldn't advise that. A similar story, Reb Shmuel Leib Diskin. It was a town where the Rav there, his son became, where the Shoichet in the town, his son became a maskil. And the people in town felt that the position of Shoichet is very prominent, off the D by you, is a very prominent position, and he represents the town. People know who the Shoichet is. In other towns, they know who your Shoichet is. It's a Choshva position. And somebody who is child is a maskil, we shouldn't have him as our Shoichet. So he asked Reb Shmuel Leib Diskin, do you think we can fire him? Reb Shmuel Leib Diskin said, I understand that you want a Shoichet whose house, it's a perfect house. I understand that. You're entitled to want that in your town. But you haven't got a right to fire him for that. So if you can, find him another job. And if he takes another job, then you have no problem. You can't fire him. Try and find him something else. So they looked and they found him another job. They came to him and they offered him this other job. And he said, sounds great to me, I'm interested. This person now went to Reb Shmuel Leib Diskin. And he asked Reb Shmuel Leib Diskin, the Shoichet, should I take the job they've offered me? Sounds good to me, I'm going to take it. I just want to make sure if you agree and think I should take it. Reb Shmuel Leib Diskin says, you're crazy. What do you want to take that job for? You've got a job now as a Shoichet. It's a chashva job, a prominent position. Why would you want to give it up? This is a much better job what you have now. So again, the people came, the tiniest Reb Shmuel Leib Diskin. You told us to found him a job. We found him a job. Who's going to take it? You told him not to take it. He says, what can I do? You asked me advice. He asked me advice. When he asked me advice, I had to give advice. Good for him. For him, it made no sense. The job he has is a better job. The next pasuk you have after that is, Loisase oval bamishpot, loisisa pnei dol, v'loisedar pnei godel, b'tzedek tishpoit amisecho. So you've got to be careful in judgment. You don't give honor to rich. You don't treat a poor person in a way because you want him to get the money. You have to be careful. And we're so worried about the judges looking who the people are. We have halacha over here. There's halacha when you come before the judge that if the one person is rich and one is poor, we tell the rich person, either you make sure he's dressed rich like you, or you have to dress poor like him. But you have to come equal in front of the judges. The Sefer Ariyahel asks a very obvious question. Imagine you have a court case. On one side of the court case is Carlos Slim, or Warren Buffett, or Bill Gates. And they're coming on one side. On the other side is the guy who stands behind the counter in the grocery store. So now we tell, I know Warren Buffett might not be good because he dresses like a guy behind the grocery store, but you take one of these rich people dresses and $2,000 Giorgio Armani suit, so you tell him, supply him with a suit like that as well, or you dress up like a clerk in a grocery store, one of the two. So they come to the court now equal. Now you have there Bill Gates dressed like a grocery store clerk together with the other person. When the judges see the two people there, they know this is Bill Gates. They know this is rich and this is poor. What's the difference? What clothing they're wearing? How does the clothing make a difference? Sorry, Ariyahel says, you see from this how much a person is affected by what he sees, and particularly by first impressions. Somebody comes in front of you and you see how they're dressed. It affects you, your impression of them. Everybody, this is so common. A person walks into Beis Medrash, he's wearing a kapota, a humbug, is all dressed. Who's this chashev yid? Who says it's chashev? Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Because he's wearing a kapota, makes him chashev. The people are blinded by appearances. It's natural. People look about what they see. They judge people by what they see. And this we see so clearly in this halacha. In that pasuk we just read, it said, "B'tzedek tishpoit amisecha." And Rashi tells us, to second pshat, Rashi brings down his dover achet, it means, "Hevidon es chavericha lekafschus." You have to judge people favorably. This is one of the hardest halachas to be mekayim. Judge people favorably. Like we just said previously, how people judge by appearances. People see things how their mind sees them. And people jump to conclusions. And I'd like to bring you out a couple of mises of this taking place. First one I saw on a safe on this pasuk, Rabbi Ari Levine, in the book about his life, it mentions how he was by a levaya. And he writes that a close friend of the person who they were burying was also there. And he sees during the levaya that man slips out and he goes to a florist and he buys a plant. And Rabbi Ari Levine says he couldn't believe it. That's how much respect he has for his friend. In the middle of the levaya, he's got nothing more important to do than to go and buy a plant. And it bothered him very much. And he wanted, in this week's parashah, a mitzvah of a teichacha, of rebuke. So later, the next day, went over him to ask him, why he did that, and explain to him, that's not how you act during a levaya. So the man told him that what had happened is that there was somebody in the hospital who had a very sickness, which was extremely easy to catch that sickness, very contagious sickness. And after he died, they wanted to burn everything that he possessed. His clothing had to be burnt, and they were going to burn his tefillin as well. And he had tried to stop them with the burning the tefillin, and they wouldn't agree. There was a frum doctor in the hospital, and he spoke to him, and the doctor agreed, it's not necessary to burn the tefillin. They shouldn't burn them, but there's nothing he can do. So he worked out with the doctor that he would bring into the room, the doctor would help him, and they would put a plant there. They would take out the earth, and underneath the earth, they would hide the tefillin, and then they would take the plant out, and that way they would be able to rescue the tefillin. And all this was going to take place by 12 noon. If he wouldn't get it there in time, then the tefillin would be burnt. So he had no time during the levaya, he had to rush and do that. But again, Rabbi Ari Levine said it was such a lesson to him, how it's so impossible to judge someone, how careful we have to be. One of my favorite stories is a person came to a bakery, and the bakery is called Glatt Kosher Bakery. This man was incensed. Glatt Kosher? Glatt can only be, meat can be glatt. Fish can't be glatt, or anything can, nothing can be glatt. It's halacha to do with meat. So how could he call it Glatt Kosher Bakery? So he, when he's in the store, he starts screaming at the person serving them behind the counter. Now this man wasn't too interested. Like I always tell you, I just work here. So he says, yeah, but how could he do it? It's a chutzpah. He says, listen, you want to speak to the owner? You got problems? You speak to the owner. He says, yeah, I'd like to speak to him. Call him here. So he says, Mr. Glatt, this guy would like to speak to you. Then there's another story of a band. The band didn't turn up at the wedding. The band didn't turn up. And there was a they called them. There was some misunderstanding about the date. There was a confusion. And they weren't able to come. They were coming. Let's say they were coming Brooklyn to Muncie. They weren't able to get there anymore. It was impossible now. So now these people were left with a chasna, with no band there. There was somebody there, and they started making calls. And they got hold of this person and that person, and everybody they tell them, it's Mamisha Meis Mitzvah, you've got to help out over here. It's a chasna without a band. And they got people together, dropped everything they were doing just to help out, to be able to make a band at the wedding. And so it's an hour and a half into the chasna, and this band is setting up the music. And people are watching and saying, it's disgusting. You hire a band, and they turn up 2 hours late. What a chutzpah. These people were Meis Nefesh to help out. And people look at them with disdain, with disgust. And they don't realize these people were Meis Nefesh tzaddikim. And they look at them as Rishoyim. Just one final story. There was a person sitting on a train. And he has with him, it's in the subway, four children with him. And he is spaced out. The look some of you have during Shia. And the kids are running wild, like I guess some of you also are doing during Shia. And there's one boy who's got a lollipop, and he has great fun of sticking it to people's newspapers. And then there's another one just charging into people. Another one is screaming there. And the people on the train are trying to relax, trying to sleep. Everyone is reading, relaxing in different ways. And these kids are driving them up the wall. And if you look at these people, you can see that they are getting really mad. You can see the American flag, the blue, red, and white in their faces. You see the smoke coming out of their ears, out of their noses. They are mad. And at first, nobody says anything. Finally, one of them can't take it anymore. So he taps the person on the shoulder and he says, "These are your children?" He says, "Yeah. You know, you see they're getting a little rowdy. Perhaps you should take care of your children." And then says, I'm so sorry. You've got to forgive me. You see, I just didn't realize what was happening. We were just on the way back from my wife's funeral, and we were just going home, so I was just, I'll take care of them, don't worry. So you can imagine how these people on the train feel. These kids on the way back from their mother's funeral, and they're worried about how the kids are behaving, and all of them then put a smile on, so nice to the children, and they forget all the bother the kids were doing for them. When you understand somebody's situation, you act differently. So many times in life, you have tainas on a person. A terebi, you have tainas on. Have you done this kol adam lekafschus? You have to know. You don't know everything that's happening. You don't know a big picture. The pasuk says in this week's parasha, this one hopefully you're familiar with, loy sikum loy sitor es b'nei amecho v'ahavta l'reacho kamoicha ani Hashem. The Magen Avraham says that before one begins davening, one should be mekabel in themselves the mitzvah of v'ahavta reacha kamoicha. It's from the Arizal. Every day before Shachris, you're mechuyev to mekabel this mitzvah of v'ahavta reacha kamoicha. And the question is an obvious question. Why should be mekabel this on yourself before davening? Wouldn't it make more sense after you daven, you're going home, you're going to business, you're going to learn, wherever you're going, you're going to deal with people. Now you have to be makbid on Avos Yisrael. Now you're dealing b'nok adam lamokim. You're dealing with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Why now before davening? Why now before davening should you be makbid on Avos Yisrael? So the pshat is, well, I'll explain it with a story. There were two brothers. One was rich and one was poor, like in many stories and like in real life. And the poor brother is making a chasna. He cannot get the funds together. So he goes to the business of his rich brother. He comes into the receptionist and he says, "I'd like to speak to the president of the company." She says, "Who should I tell him is here?" He says, "Tell him his brother is here." So she goes in and she says, "Your brother is here to see you." He thinks to himself, "My brother? What does he want from me? Oh, I know what. He's making a chasna. He's probably coming here to get money from me." So he tells her, tells the receptionist, go and tell this man, I don't know what he's talking about, I don't have any brothers. So she goes back to him, she says, he doesn't know what you're talking about, he doesn't have any brothers. The man leaves, is very brokenhearted, dejected, and he goes home. On the way home, he stops off to visit his father. He tells his father what happened. The next time the rich brother comes to visit the father, he knocks at the door, the father opens the door. So the father says to his son, who are you? He says, what do you mean? I'm your son. He says, I don't recognize you. He says, you're not that old yet. You must recognize me. He says, no, I don't recognize you. He says, you know, you're my father, I'm your son. He says, no, you're not. He says, what are you talking about? He says, I have a son. And you said it's not your brother. He says, if he's my son and you're not his brother, you can't be my son. It's not possible at all. A person comes in davening and he says to the Rebbeinu Shlom, Avinu, of Harachmon, we come begging the Rebbeinu Shlom as a Tata. Rebbeinu Shlom, we want things from you as a father. The only way you can come to Rebbeinu Shlom and daven and ask him to act to you as a father acts to his son is if you recognize that the other Yidden Klai Yisrael are your brothers. That is why before you daven, before you come and ask and treat the Rebbeinu Shlom as a father, first make sure they accept every other Jew as your brother. Then the beginning of the pasuk was loisikoim veloisitoir, and sometimes we come to midas, and we think, yeah, this one's easy, this one's hard. Revenge, I'm not the revengeful type. I'm not the type to bear grudge. Not me. Never happens to me. It's all a matter of circumstances. Midas are difficult. It's all a matter. It has to be the situation, and then you see how difficult it is. And I'd like to give you an example. I don't know if you've heard this example before, but I think this example really brings out the point. There was a person who was moving house a couple of doors down the road. And he didn't have any money at all. So he thought he'll do it. He has a hand trolley he'll do it with. He'll get a friend of his to help him. But he knows, he sees, he has a neighbor who has a truck. And this neighbor of his has this pickup truck, flatbed truck, which he never uses on Sunday. So if his neighbor lends him the truck, he'll be able to do it very, very quickly. Otherwise, he's going to have to do it by hand. So he's sure he'll lend it to him because he doesn't use it every Sunday. So he goes to his neighbor and he says, would I be able to borrow your truck for 3-4 hours on Sunday so I could move my things from one house to the other? So the man says, you know how it is, I want to lend it to you, but sometimes maybe, I sometimes need it. You understand, right? I'd love to lend it for you, but I'd love to lend it to you. I'm really, really sorry. Perhaps another time. So what can you do? The man goes home, and Sunday morning he's got his friend. They get up at 5 a.m, and now it's going to take a whole day's work and hard work. And they start schlepping the stuff from his house, and they're using his hand trolley back and forth. It's heavy, heavy work. They're exhausted. At 10 o'clock in the morning, it starts pouring. It's pouring the rain, they're getting drenched. And every time they go, they see down the road there, that pickup truck, that white pickup truck is just parked there, not moving. They're back and forth, drenched, exhausted, and they see the guy is watching them. From behind the curtain, they see him peeking out, looking at them, as they're going like this. Another hour, 2 hours go by. And already they're catching a cold already. They must feel they can't go on, but they have to finish today. And every so often, they see the guy peeking out at them. It takes them till 7 o'clock in the evening. They've been working 14 hours straight, and they finally finish. That white pickup truck never left the driveway. And now, finally, he's in his new apartment, and he lies down the bed, exhausted. He can't move. 2 minutes later, the bell rings. He goes to the door, and there is his friendly neighbor. And this neighbor who owned the white pickup truck. And he says to him, excuse me, you know, when you were moving, I noticed you had a toolbox. Could I perhaps borrow your hammer right now? Could you lend me your hammer? Lend me? I should lend you. You can imagine what is going through your mind at that time. And if you're going to give him the hammer, you want to hit him over the head with that hammer. The chutzpah, how dare he ask for that hammer? But you're an Elach Yid, and you remember, there's a pasuk in the Torah, loy sikoy. Now, nobody says it's easy. The Mesuz Yisharim describes Nakama. Mesukah hi midvash, sweeter than honey. There's nothing more geschmack than getting revenge. And I'm sure some of you may have experienced this in life, that feeling. It's mesukah midvash, but you can't do it. It's not right. Not because ethically it's not right, but the Torah says, loy sikoy, you can't do that. Okay, so let's say you're on a madrega. You're not going to take revenge. You're going to lend him the hammer. But now, when you take that hammer and you give it to him, what you want to say to him at least at the time is, you think I'm a lowlife like you? You think I'm a disgusting person like you? You think I didn't see you watching me the whole day? Take this hammer! And you want to throw the hammer at him and say, I am like you. I'm a person who lends his things out. Here, take the hammer. At least that you want to say. But no. The Torah writes, loy sito, don't bear a grudge. What the Torah tells you to do is, give him the hammer with a smile on your face, and perhaps you mekayim the end of the pasuk. V'ahavta l'reicha kamoicha. Is there something perhaps I could help you with? Mit Hashem, we should be zeicha to get to that madrega. Shabbos.
Did the story happen or is it emotional?